Imagine just for a second that you are a robot. Specifically, you're a solar-powered high-altitude balloon called the Stratosonde. You are floating 20 kilometers above the surface of the Earth. It is dead silent up there. The sky above you isn't blue, it's pitch black, space black. And below you, the curve of the planet is clearly visible, just glowing in the sunlight.
It's a beautiful image, isn't it?
Oh,
But it's
absolutely.
also a profoundly lonely one.
Extremely lonely. And here's the situation. You've been flying for days, you launched in Colorado, drifted across the American Midwest, caught the jet stream, and now you're way out over the Atlantic Ocean, heading toward Europe.
But you have a massive problem.
A huge one. You have a voice, you got a radio transmitter, but you don't know what language to speak.
And in the world of wireless communication, language is everything. I mean, if you speak the wrong language in the wrong place, the consequences are, they're binary.
Binary how?
At best, nobody hears you.
Yeah.
At worst, you're breaking international law.
And that is the premise of the deep dive we're getting into today. We're looking at a fascinating engineering challenge. How does a tiny autonomous balloon know exactly where it is and how to talk to the ground without an internet connection?
And doing it with a brain that is shockingly small, we're analyzing a system called H3 Lite. It's a custom software solution built for these Stratosonde balloons to solve what you could call the Tower of Babel problem of global radio regulations.
Okay, let's unpack that Tower of Babel first, because I think most people assume radio is just universal. You turn it on, you broadcast, and it works. But the source material makes it clear that the frequency map of the world is a total mess.
It really is. The Stratosonde uses a protocol called LoRaWAN. For those who don't know, that's Long Range Wide Area Network. It's the standard for the Internet of Things. Low power, sends data over long distances. It's perfect for balloons.
Perfect, but.
But the specific frequencies you're legally allowed to use change the moment you cross a border.
Right, so in the United States, we use the 902 to 928 megahertz band. We call that US 915. That's the standard language for American IoT devices.
Correct. But if you keep drifting east and cross the Atlantic, the moment you hit the airspace of, say, Ireland or France, you have to switch. Europe uses the 863 to 870 megahertz band, EU 868.
And it gets worse in Asia, right?
Much worse. It's a patchwork quilt. Japan has its own subband, South Korea has another, Indonesia has yet another. It's not standardized at all globally.
So, play out the scenario for me. Our balloon is still blasting out signals on the US frequency while it's floating over Paris. What happens?
Well, two things. First, it's shouting into the void. The gateways on the ground in France, the antennas listening for data, they're tuned to 868. They physically will not hear a device transmitting on 915. It's like trying to listen to an AM radio station on an FM dial.
So you lose your data?
You lose your data. But secondly, and this is more important, transmitting on US frequencies in Europe is illegal. That 900 megahertz band might be reserved for cellular networks or emergency services or military use in that country. If your balloon starts jamming a local fire department, you're going to have a very bad day.
So the balloon needs to know, okay, I just crossed a border, time to switch frequencies. But here is the constraint that makes this story so good and why we're talking about it today. The Stratosonde isn't running on a smartphone processor. It doesn't have 5G. It can't just ask Google where it is.
Not even close. The brain of this operation is an STM32WLE5 microcontroller. It's an incredibly efficient, low-power chip designed to run on solar scraps. But it's tiny. It has about 256 kilobytes of flash memory and only 64 kilobytes of RAM.
64 kilobytes of RAM. I want to pause on that because we're so spoiled by modern tech. A single screenshot on my phone is probably 3 megabytes. That's 50 times bigger than the entire working memory of this robot.
Exactly. And you have to remember, that tiny memory space has to hold everything. The operating system, the drivers for the sensors, the flight control logic, the radio stack itself. When the developers looked at what was left after all the essentials, they realized they only had about 50 kilobytes of space.
50 kilobytes.
That's the budget.
So the mission is fit the regulatory boundaries of every single country on Earth into a file size smaller than a 1990s email attachment.
That was the challenge, and that is where H3 Lite comes in.
Okay, so let's walk through the engineering logic here. Because my first thought, and I assume the listener's first thought, is why make this complicated? The balloon has GPS, right?
It does. It knows its latitude and longitude perfectly.
So why not just store a list of coordinates for all the country borders? You know, draw a box around France. If I'm inside the box, switch to European mode. If I'm outside, stay in US mode.
Inside the box is the key phrase there. Borders aren't boxes. I mean, Have you looked closely at the coastline of Norway recently, or the border between Chile and Argentina?
It's jagged, it's messy, it's zigs and zags.
Incredibly complex. In the world of mapping, borders are defined by polygon shapes, with thousands upon thousands of little points connecting them. To store the shape of every country in the world with high precision takes megabytes of data. They don't have megabytes.
You have 50 kilobytes.
And even if we could squeeze the data in, there's the computational cost. To figure out if a specific GPS dot is inside a complex shape with 10,000 jagged edges, that requires a lot of math.
The point and polygon algorithm.
Right. To run that, you effectively have to draw a line from your dot in every direction and count how many times it crosses a borderline. Doing that math on a tiny low-power microcontroller while it's also trying to manage flight controls, it would choke the processor, it drains the battery, it's just too heavy.
Okay, so polygons are out. Too big, too much math. So plan B, a grid. Just draw a graph over the world, rectangles, like a chessboard. Right. Just say grid square A1 is America, grid square A2 is the Atlantic.
The grid approach.
Yeah.
This is often used in things like the Maidenhead locator system for amateur radio. It's simple. But you run into a fundamental problem with the shape of the Earth.
Because the Earth isn't flat.
Exactly. It's a sphere, well, technically an oblate spheroid.
Yeah.
If you try to wrap a sheet of graph paper around a ball, what happens?
It crumples, especially at the top and bottom.
That's called polar distortion. Mm. A rectangle grid square at the equator covers a massive area, but that same rectangle near the Arctic Circle gets squished into a tiny, weirdly shaped area. It's inconsistent. It makes the math of figuring out who's my neighbor really messy.
So rectangles are out, polygons are out. This is where the developers looked at a surprisingly non-scientific source for inspiration. They looked at Uber.
The rideshare company.
I was surprised by this connection, but when you think about it, it makes sense. Uber needs to know where cars are. They need to calculate surge pricing.
Yeah.
They need to map millions of points in real time. And they don't use squares. They developed a system called H3.
Which is based on hexagons?
Hexagons are the bestagons, as the internet meme goes.
In this case, the meme is actually scientifically accurate. Mathematicians love hexagons for tiling a sphere. They tile relatively cleanly compared to squares or triangles. But for our balloon, the most important property is that a hexagon is a close approximation of a circle. The distance from the center of a hexagon to the center of any of its six neighbors is roughly the same.
Which isn't true for squares. The distance to the corner neighbor is longer than the distance to the side neighbor.
Exactly. With a hexagon, if you move one step in any direction, you're covering the same distance. That consistency simplifies the math for things like search radius immensely.
So the idea is, instead of storing the jagged shape of France, we just fill the shape of France up with a bunch of hexagons and tell the balloon, if you're in one of these hexagons, you're in Europe.
Precisely. It turns a complex geometry problem into a simple list problem. But there was a catch. Uber open sourced H3, which is great, but the library is designed for cloud servers with infinite RAM. The code alone is over 200 kilobytes.
Which is almost the entire capacity of our chip, so they couldn't just copy-paste the Uber code.
No. They had to strip it down to the absolute bare metal. They called it H3 Lite. This is where the engineering gets really clever. They can make a hard choice about resolution.
This is the size of the hexagons, right? How granular do we get?
Yes. H3 offers different resolution levels. Resolution 1 has hexagons that are massive, like 800 kilometers wide. That's too vague. Resolution 4 has hexagons that are about 23 kilometers wide.
So R4 sounds better. 23 kilometers is a nice tight fit around a border.
It is precise, but the math didn't work out for the memory budget. To cover the world's land masses at resolution 4, you'd need about 87,000 hexagons. That would take up 340 kilobytes of memory.
Game over. We only have 50.
So they looked at resolution 3. At R3, each hexagon is roughly 100 to 130 kilometers wide. It takes about 11,000 hexagons to cover the relevant parts of the world.
And in terms of memory?
About 49 kilobytes.
There is the Goldilocks zone. Fits right in the budget. But wait, 100 kilometers wide? That sounds pretty coarse. If the hexagon spills over the border, couldn't the balloon be in the wrong country?
It could be off by 30 to 60 kilometers. But think about the context of this mission. The Stratosan is drifting slowly, maybe 10 to 30 meters per second. The transition from the U.S. to Europe takes days. And a LoRaWAN gateway on the ground can hear the balloon from 50 kilometers away.
So being precise down to the meter isn't actually necessary.
Exactly. Plus or minus 50 kilometers is perfectly acceptable for selecting a radio frequency plan. It's a classic engineering trade-off. We sacrifice a little bit of geographic precision to gain massive memory efficiency.
So they settled on resolution 3. Now they have 11,000 hexagons to store. How do they actually format that data? They're not storing images of hexagons.
No, it's all numbers. H3 gives every hexagon on Earth a unique 64-bit ID. It's like a fingerprint for that specific patch of ground. But storing a full 64-bit number for 11,000 entries is still inefficient.
So they put the hexagons on a diet?
They used a custom lookup table. They realized they didn't need the whole ID. They compressed it down to a 4-byte entry.
4 bytes. That's tiny.
Each entry basically says, here's the base cell ID, here's the path to get to the specific hexagon, and here is the region ID.
So it really is just a phone book.
A very small, very efficient phone book. The balloon checks its GPS, calculates its hexagon ID, looks it up in the phone book, and sees region 1.
And region 1 means USA.
Correct.
Okay, let's talk about the decision-making process. Because the system categorizes the entire world into 3 different buckets. It isn't just US or Europe.
Right. Scenario A is what we just discussed, the valid region, IDs 1 through 15.
These map to the known frequency plans, US 915, EU 868, AU 915 for Australia. If the lookup table returns one of these, the balloon says, great, I know where I am, configures a radio, and starts transmitting.
Simple enough. Then there's scenario B, the prohibited zone, and the lookup table lists ID 16.
The source data lists some specific examples here, places like North Korea, Libya, Sudan, Yemen.
Correct. These are regions where transmitting encrypted radio signals from an American research balloon is, let's just say, inadvisable.
To put it mildly.
It could be due to strict government prohibitions, active conflict zones where radio silence is enforced, or simply a lack of any regulatory framework for these frequencies.
So what does the balloon do if it drifts over one of these regions? Does it self-destruct?
Thankfully, no. It goes into radio silence. If the lookup returns ID 16, the firmware actively blocks the radio stack. It listens, but it never speaks.
I like that this is hard-coded. It's not just a failure to connect. It's a compliance feature. It keeps the researchers out of jail and ensures the balloon isn't seen as a threat.
Exactly. But then we have scenario C, and this is the one that covers the vast majority of the planet, the ocean, or no man's land.
So the lookup table only contains land masses, right? Because storing empty hexagons for the Pacific Ocean would be a waste of memory.
Correct. If the balloon is over the Atlantic, the lookup returns. Nothing. Zero.
So the balloon is floating over the water. It checks the phone book, and the phone book says, I got nothing. What does it do? It can't just shut up for 3 days while crossing the ocean. If it stops transmitting, the ground team loses it.
All right. So it uses a technique called the ring search. This is where the hexagon geometry really shines. Imagine the balloon is at the center of a hexagon. It checks that hexagon. It's empty. So then it checks the 6 hexagons immediately surrounding it. That's ring 1.
Still empty.
Then it checks the next layer out, ring 2, then ring 3. It keeps expanding the search radius outward, like ripples in a pond, up to ring 6.
How big of an area is that?
A 6-ring search covers a radius of about 390 kilometers.
How long does it take the chip to check all those hexagons? It sounds like a lot of checking.
It takes up 43 milliseconds.
That's incredibly fast.
And the logic is smart. It says, I'm over the ocean, but if I can find a valid region nearby, say, I'm 300 kilometers off the coast of New York, I'll adopt the settings for New York.
It's trying to shout to the nearest shore.
Exactly. It finds the nearest valid region and configures the radio for that. Because high-altitude balloons have a massive line-of-sight horizon. Even if you're 400 kilometers offshore, a gateway on a mountain or a tall tower might pick you up.
So it's maximizing its chances. I'm in the middle of nowhere, but the last thing I saw was America, so I'm going to use American frequencies until I see Ireland.
And that transition, that handoff, is the real magic trick.
Let's visualize that. The blog post actually maps out a day-in-the-life flight path. I want to walk through that to see it in action.
Okay. T-minus zero. Launch day. We're in Colorado.
GPS says 39.7 degrees north. The balloon wakes up.
It runs the lookup. It takes 2 milliseconds. The table says US 915. The balloon configures the radio for 900 megahertz and starts sending data.
Easy. Now, fast forward 24 hours. The balloon has caught the jet stream. It's moving fast. It's now over the Atlantic, east of Newfoundland.
So strictly speaking, it's over water. The direct lookup for its location returns a zero.
Does it panic?
No panic. It runs the ring search. It scans outward. It finds that the nearest land is still the U.S.-Canada region, about 550 kilometers to the west.
So it keeps talking in U.S. 915.
Yep. Tries to shout back to North America. Might not reach, but it's the best option it has.
Now, T plus 36 hours. We are approaching the coast of Ireland.
Now the geometry changes. The balloon does its scan, and suddenly, within that search radius to the east, it hits a hexagon that belongs to EU 868.
Europe.
Europe. The code sees that, and instantly, seamlessly, it switches the radio to 868 megahertz. No human intervention, no ground control command. Just a tiny chip looking at a tiny table and making a decision.
That is really cool. It's true autonomy. And you mentioned the speed 2 milliseconds for the lookup.
Compare that to the other systems.
Yeah.
A GPS lock from a cold start, that can take 60 seconds. Even transmitting the data packet takes a few seconds. The H3 light lookup is effectively instantaneous.
So the complex part of the brain, the part figuring out the geopolitics of radio, is actually the fastest part.
Because they cheated.
They cheated.
In the best possible way. They used pre-computation. The balloon isn't calculating the shape of the Earth. It isn't clipping polygons. It isn't running complex geometry. It's just reading a list.
Ah, so the hard work happened before the launch.
Exactly. All the heavy lifting, the complex math, the polygon clipping, the H3 indexing, that was all done by a Python script on a powerful laptop on the ground. That script generated the simple lookup table.
That is a great lesson for anyone building hardware. Don't make the robot do the math if you can do the math for it beforehand.
Pre-computation is power. The balloon is dumb, but fast, because the computer on the ground was smart and slow.
I want to dig into a couple of technical takeaways here for the engineers listening. We mentioned the memory constraints earlier, 256 KB flash, 64 KB RAM. How much did H3 Lite actually use in the end?
The code itself is tiny, about 4 kilobytes. The lookup table is 43.8 kilobytes, so roughly 48 KB total.
And the RAM?
Less than 1 kilobyte.
That is wildly efficient. And the source mentions they achieved that speed using a binary search. Can you explain why that specific choice matters?
Sure. In modern software, if you want to find data fast, you often use fancy structures like hash tables. Mm. They're fast, but they consume a lot of RAM because they have to be loaded into memory. A binary search is old school. It's what you do with a physical dictionary.
You open it to the middle.
Right. If the word you want is after the middle page, you ignore the first half, you split the second half, you keep splitting and splitting. It's called O log N efficiency.
Divide and conquer.
But the key for the balloon is that it requires zero extra RAM overhead. It works directly on the data stored in the flash memory. It's predictable, it's stable, it's a win for boring computer science.
Sometimes boring is best. I also love the breakdown of which regions took up the most space in that 48 KB table. Europe is surprisingly expensive.
EU 868 takes up 27% of the total table entries.
Why? Is it just because it's big?
No, it's because it's complex. Think about the geography. Lots of small countries, jagged coastlines, thousands of islands in Greece and Scandinavia. You need more hexagons to define the shape of Europe than you do for, say, Australia, which is a big, solid chunk.
And the smallest region?
Israel. AS9234. It takes up just 2 hexagons in the table.
2 hexagons. That really puts the scale of this grid in perspective.
It really does.
So, zooming out, we have a balloon that knows where it is, thanks to a stripped-down version of Uber's mapping system. What's the big picture here? Why should the listener care about hexagons on a balloon?
I think the big takeaway is that we often assume we need massive computing power to have awareness.
Mm-hmm.
We think we need AI or constant cloud connections or gigabytes of data to understand the world.
We assume smart devices need to be connected devices.
Right. But H3 Lite proves you can fit the world in your pocket. You can fit the regulatory world into 50 kilobytes. It's a blueprint for the future of IoT.
Think about the applications. Ocean buoys, wildlife trackers on migrating birds, drones monitoring remote forests.
Exactly. These devices are often offline, solar-powered, and memory-constrained. They can't phone home to ask, am I allowed to fly here, or what frequency should I use? They need to carry that knowledge with them.
This lookup table approach, combining hexagons with ruthless optimization, unlocks true autonomy for cheap, low-power hardware.
It's a reminder that good code isn't just about what you can do, it's about what you can do without. Efficiency is an art form.
Before we wrap up, I have a thought that's been bugging me. If we can compress the radio laws of the world into a 50 KB table, what else could we compress?
That is the provocative question.
Could we map weather patterns?
Yep.
Or political risk? Or maybe magnetic variation for navigation?
Theoretically, yes. Any global data set could be hex mapped. Imagine a drone that has a climate risk lookup table or a population density table. It could make safety decisions offline. I'm over to city high density, so I'll fly slower and deploy a parachute if I fail. And it knows that just by checking a 4-byte hexagon ID.
Offline AI powered by hexagons. I love it.
It really is the basic gun.
That wraps up our deep dive into the Stratasons hexagonal brain. Huge thanks to the development team for open sourcing this logic. It really is a masterclass in embedded engineering.
Absolutely. Check out the code if you want to see how to squeeze the world into a chip.
Thanks for listening. Keep your eyes on the skies and your memory optimized.
Goodbye.